Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Yeah, so Ransom told me about William. I'm so sorry. You must feel terrible. Why didn't you say something?
I haven't really processed it. I mean, he was an exact copy of me. Had his own quarters on a cooler ship, but he died for no reason. I guess I was trying to make all of this matter because then I would matter. But trying to make this dumb movie important just proved that I'm not.
It's just a holodeck program.
I know, I was stupid. Let's just get out of here. Computer, Arch.
Cancel Arch.
Mariner.
I found deeper meaning in Rise of Vindicta, and it was totally unscripted. If I did it, you can too.
But it's a bad story.
Yeah, it's an uneven slog that totally ignores the successes of the original, but it's also a Starfleet movie, which means it's worth doing.
Yeah, it is a Starfleet movie. We are Starfleet!
Yeah, we're Starfleet.
Yes, okay, okay, first we have to figure a way out of this brick.
Nick!
I never stop believing in you, Purplehead! I love you! I'm in love with you!
I'm in love with you too, buddy. Let's go!
Okay, how about this? Why don't we talk about death?
Oh, right, yeah. That's right. I almost forgot.
Okay, all right. Let's, before we talk about the death stuff. What was it? Oh, yeah, we're the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What are we doing? What's this? Where am I? Who's podcast. Talking? Sorry, that wasn't.
What are we doing?
Milhouse loses his glasses and he's all like, what? Where are you? Who's talking?
How did you get
over
here?
The top?
I vaguely remember that.
It was just really over
Simpsons,
the top. Because it's
Simpsons reference.
Yeah, because it's like you'd be able to tell who's
That's
talking
an
by.
Over the top and under the radar reference.
Yeah, well, that was a fancy way of putting things
in one.
It was just funny because, and I'm explaining why it's funny, because it's like his friends are talking and he can't see without his glasses, but presumably he'd be able to hear them, so he would figure out who. That's why it's kind of funny.
I had gathered.
Sometimes when things are disorienting, it overwhelms your other senses.
Just like the intro to this particular episode of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
God, did we do it again?
No, we're good. We said the name of the podcast.
Okay.
We are welcoming the people now.
You said it.
Welcome to the audience. The It's Got Star Trek podcast. This week we are discussing.
Say it again, I dare you.
Yeah, in podcasts, when you read podcasting articles, you know, like Dr. Podcast.
Yeah, Dr. Podcast or Ranger Podcast.
Yeah,
Podcast. Or Podcast Fancy.
Or Podcast Lights. No, that doesn't
work. Podcast Fancy.
Podcast Fancy.
3-2-1 Podcast.
Cast Fancy. Instead of Cat Fancy.
Oh,
cast,
yeah.
Cast Fancy.
Yeah, that's funnier, but it's harder to make the connection.
Is it, though?
Cast Fancy?
Maybe that's what makes it funnier, then, because it's harder to make the connection that you are rewarded. Those people who make the connection are rewarded with greater laughter.
But, like, I would either think of a wizard casting spells or, like, a cast you put on your arm when you break it.
Well, I mean, it's a multi-use joke.
When I break your arm?
Well, yeah, when you break my arm, you got to order Cast Fancy. But it could be, like, you could be talking about casts, podcasts, and spell casts.
Saturday Night Live casts throughout the years.
If I cast a spell and it broke your arm.
Saturday Night Cast.
And then I used your arm to beat you.
Well, what if you rolled a 2D, two ones, snake eyes?
And I rolled a
critical fail.
I rolled an 11 on a D8.
What? That's not possible. And then, okay.
It's got Star Trek podcast. Anyway, what I was saying is in the podcast blogs.
Podcast. Ponfarcast?
The Ponfarcast, they always say the name of the podcast, in this case, the It's Got Star Trek podcast. You know, say it over and over again.
Episode 154. Yeah.
They also say the names of the people.
Well, when you
Jesse, and I'm Patrick.
I remember
my name is Dan.
I think things like radio commercials, you're supposed to say like the phone number
radio.
Of the place.
They say the website. Phone number like
radio.
A million times.
Yeah, they have a number of times they're supposed to say it.
588-2300 Empire.
That's 588-2800 Empire. Get
like,
it today. 588-2300 Empire. That's 588-2300 Empire. Don't forget 588-2300 Empire.
Yeah. So yes, the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's us. I'm Patrick, and that's Dan over there, and Jesse over there.
Dan's over there.
Yep. So stop looking over there.
Look over here.
Yeah.
As Jesse noted, this is here. The 154th episode of the podcast. During this episode of the podcast, we plan, quite sincerely, we plan to discuss Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 8, Crisis Point 2, Paradoxus. So that's the plan.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So this, this is a sequel, of course, to Crisis Point, just Crisis Point, the good old Crisis Point episode.
By the way, paradoxus means contrary to expectation.
Well,
according to Wiktionary.
Ironically, that's what I expected it to mean.
Which Wiktionary?
Is that ironic? Contrary to, and that was pretty funny.
Sophisticated,
that
right?
That was sophisticated.
Sophisticated.
Yeah.
This is a sequel to that, as we lamely predicted last week, of course. It was in all likelihood going to be a sequel to that. With the same basic purpose of providing some character growth and development.
I don't think anybody predicted Bucephalus Dagger.
Which, does that mean... Is that like a horse penis joke?
Oh, whoa.
Or big penis? Isn't that the name of like, was that Alexander's horse or something?
Yeah.
Alexander the Great's horse?
Yeah, Bucephalus, something like that.
And then
familiar,
dagger could yeah, be was, a euphemism
could
for
be,
a,
yeah.
Well, phallus, it's got the name of fat. Well, it's Bucephalus, phallus. Yeah. So what is Bucet?
Nautius Maximus.
So this episode, unlike the previous one in which Mariner was working out some emotional stuff, this one, it turns out it's Boimler working out some emotional stuff.
B-U-C-E is a plant. Bucephalandra. But here you can also just call it B-U-C-E, which is
Buffalo Mutarelli.
Which I guess is Buse.
Buffalo Mutarelli.
But it's a genus of flowering plants in the family. So it's like a
what? You're saying you can't pronounce the last bit?
Yeah. And so Bucephalus means like plant penis.
Okay, a plant penis.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I'm saying, but I'm probably wrong.
I'm not making any connections to the wider Lower Decks or Star Trek world.
I don't think that it means that. I don't think that's what they were going for. I'm just saying Buse, however you pronounce it, B-U-C-E is a plant. Phallus means, you know,
what
wingy wang imagery.
Wingy wangs.
Okay. Anyway, we can go on.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah. So we've gone through the name, which is...
Dagger is just a cool name.
Commander Doodle.
We'll back up a little bit. We'll back up a little bit since things are going a little bit crazy.
Rebecca Doodle. That was her name.
Rebecca Doodle.
It was in the credits.
What, really? Is that her full name? Yes.
We get an opportunity.
First and last name?
Yes.
We get an opportunity this week.
Becky Doodle.
To have parody jokes across the whole Star Trek cinematic universe.
You mean parody as in P-A-R-O-D-Y or P-A...
Oh, God.
What do you mean, like P-A-R-I-T-Y?
Yeah.
As in equal chunks?
Yeah.
It may be a little of both. But there are websites and discussion boards out there that go into the super details of every single reference.
Do you see yourself as some sort of instigator?
But I did think it made sense to call out some of the ones that maybe jumped to top of mind in this first segment of the podcast before we get into the meat of some of the character stuff. They had the whole Star Trek II research station action going. I think they even had like a Genesis device in the background. Mm-hmm. Although in this case it was on Europa, but it was the same basic shape of the Regula station. They had the same uniforms on.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the temporal laboratory on Europa?
Yes, the temporal laboratory.
Are you talking about when there was the Romulans? There was those three, the twins, the Maldonis twins or the Melpinar twins?
What are you talking about?
Triplets? Triplets.
Yes. You confused me by saying twins.
I'm sorry. I
thought you were referring to something else that I was supposed to recall.
You had twin triplet confusion.
The Melpinar triplets, didn't they look a bit like Talin? From is that been discussed yet during this episode?
They looked a little Talin-ish.
They looked Talin-ish to me.
Yeah,
who's Talin?
The Vulcan from that
Rej-Douge.
The one with the
from
one
Lower
with
Decks.
Yeah, that had the
that's just an animation style. Similar.
That had emotional difficulties. That
right,
the Vulcan
right.
with the emotional difficulties. Talin. They look like triplets. Talin. So
emotional difficulties. That is one way to put that plot line in that particular episode.
Right. She was unhinged. So, right, yeah, so that was, yeah, so that was Star Trek 2, right, yeah, 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 totally.
Star Trek 2.
There's, like, all the time travel stuff.
You get all the time travel.
General Star Trek.
There was this punks from Star Trek 4. Yeah.
Right. There was part, so here are the places, here are the different places they visited. They visited the Starfleet in order. Starfleet Temporal Laboratory on Europa. This is related, bear with me.
Okay.
There was a Starfleet Aquatic Research Center in 2341.
Which is like Star Trek 4.
That was the Great Sulian Algae Crisis.
Star Trek 4, they go back in time to save an aquatic creature.
Right. So there's Sydney, July 15th, 1982. I'm not sure what that was.
That was with the punks.
That was the year Star Trek II came out, but it mimicked meeting the punks, except these were Aussie punks.
Yeah.
Aussie
punks.
So founding a federation in 2161.
Which was what we saw in Enterprise. And similarly, in Enterprise, we don't actually get to see a lot of the details. You see it from like far away. So it was kind of like a joke on that.
Did it have like a Star Trek 6 vibe to it a little bit? Like when they were in the...
Yeah. You like, know, now when that they you mentioned
when they were in the assassination... When they were in the assassination...
I agree. Well, and then that bomb they were using was from Star Trek Nemesis. The bomb that blew up the Senate, the Romulan Senate.
There was like a god, sort of a godlike figure that was disappointing at the end.
Oh, you're talking about on the third moon of Shatanari?
Yeah, Shatanari.
Not to be mistaken with the third moon of Futanari.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. The stone god creature is, yes, he is a disappointing god, just like in Star Trek V. Whereas in Star Trek 5, it was a more Judeo-Christian style white person god. Totally. In this case, it was a rock god, which is funny part because Shatner had this, when he was directing Star Trek 5, he had this whole like big rock monster creature sequence that never worked. And so they weren't able to do it. So that's alluding to that here. It's alluding to Star Trek 1 because... instead of the god, they find the right flyer from Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Kitty
Hawk. So that's kind of like V'ger in Star Trek 1. What else do they have? Of course, there's a Sovereign class ship, the Wayfarer. But that looks exactly like the Sovereign class Enterprise E from First Contact. Insurrection and Nemesis, although I think it looked mostly like First Contact style, swooping in and out. I'm sure tons of other stuff going on in there. Anything else jump out at you in terms of the naked movie references?
I was just looking up the bombs thing, and I don't know if I found it, but it said something about in 2259, Kirk was... This is from Star Trek Into Darkness. There's something about Spock is transferred to another ship shortly after Starfleet officer Thomas Harewood, sent by Commander John Harrison, bombs a Section 31 installation in London. I don't know if that's what you're...
No. They bomb the whole Senate, and I think it's... It's Nemesis.
Bomb the Senate.
Yeah, it's Nemesis.
Nemesis?
I'm just going to say that.
It's Star Trek Beyond? Are you sure it's not Star Trek Beyond?
I haven't seen Nemesis in a long time. So.
Are you sure it's not Star Trek Beyond?
I'm not sure of anything at this stage in my life.
Well, we'll figure it out one
day.
Star
Trek Beyonce.
Star Trek Beyonce. Yeah. So I want to see the Kitty Ha platitudes he gave. He says, the purpose of life is a life of purpose. It's a good one. Love without trust is a river without water. It's kind of esoteric. Kind of like, you know... I love you as much as a heart filled with love or something. It just doesn't make any sense. Or you're my joy is as big as a heart filled with love. You know, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right? I just made that up to sort of compare. Anyways, life is like a cup of tea. It's all in how you steep the water. That's just really derivative and not very creative.
That was a life is like a box of chocolates.
Yeah, right.
Kind of. And not then, exactly, but going in that direction.
We didn't get all of the last one, which is laughter and a good night's sleep, Will. And then, you know.
Yeah.
Probably says probably something heal like heal all wounds.
Heal all wounds or something. Yeah. Heal all
those. Kicking the balls.
Yeah, because you're not.
Or vagina.
Yeah, you're not supposed to go. Or ovaries. I mean, if you want to be.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Oh, jeez.
Ah, jeez. So, we're talking about, you know, like, I guess, Easter eggs from other kind of Star Trek-y things.
Some of it's Easter eggs and some of it, it's hard to place here because, yeah, this is very fan service-y in the sense that we are getting to jump around both direct references and tropes, just using all these various tropes, like the whole time travel trope repeatedly being used. I like the whole... Chronogami.
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 Yeah.
It was a chronotons and origami.
Well, so when
cross the origami threshold
at the
special effects for that was actually pretty fucking rad.
Are you talking about when they look like some kind of Star Wars or Star Trek One Star Wars? You know, are you talking about the wireframe thing?
The origami thing when they were traveling through time. And it was all like folding in on itself.
I thought you were talking about the one where I think Rutherford actually commented on. He's like about the graphics when it showed like two wireframe
things that look from
early 80s Star Trek Star Wars kind of like.
There's an even better Easter egg games there kind of that was pointed out on one of the discussion boards on the internet. Which once this is pointed out to you or once you observe it, it's extra hilarious. Is
take a deep breath. Once you observe it, you won't go back. Get ready to, you won't believe. Sit down, take a deep breath. Once you observe it, you'll never forget it.
So in
number five will make you shit.
In Star Trek II, and in this episode, you know, that these are the times where you see this whole top, you know, here it's top secret. In the Lower Decks episode, it says top secret. In the Star Trek episode 2, it says something like authorization or something. But it's the same basic thing. Mm-hmm. But the funny part about the gag is that when you see the image from, like, you know, the three quarters view a little further away, mm-hmm. and then it's zoomed in on just the message, right? When it's zoomed in on the message, it's clearly a different monitor than the one they're looking at. Like, it's a totally different shape because the one they're looking at has like curves on it and nothing on the side. But when it's zoomed in, it's got all this, like, it's a square view and a bunch of buttons.
Are you talking about the part where they had the graphic of the two wireframe to two ships pointing at each other and showing
starting with the top secret and where it's all grainy and top VHS wiggly.
Yeah. And they showed the lines between the ships.
Not even VHF. It's like film strip wiggly.
But they showed
looks like the targeting computer on an X-Wing.
You're talking about, it looks like the targeting on the X-Wing.
More badass.
Yeah, and it shows how, like, time, the chronogami breaks down the time barriers. It was talking about, like, this is the beginning, this is the end, and now they fold into one or whatever.
Chronogasmic matrix.
So I didn't even notice that there was, like, I thought it was a floating image. It was on a screen? I can't even remember now.
It was not floating.
Okay, yeah, my memory's terrible. So you're saying that there was a congruency, or what's it called when you have like a
double joke. It was a hat on a hat. it wasn't actually a hat on a hat in this case, but it was where
a continuity was it a con was there a continuity error? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Effectively, a continuity error in that the close-up shot and the faraway shot showed two different things that are meant to be the same thing, and they replicated that in this episode of Lower Decks. Crisis Point 2.
I did not pick up on that.
Paradoxes.
When
the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Number two. Good job. You're listening.
Did you know that we were doing the It's Got Star Trek podcast?
Yeah. It's not the bits.
Spit it out, but you're already doing that.
Bits. Oh. the mitts got far
black.
Parsec. It's got
parsecs.
Fun just to let you spin in the wind a little bit from time to time.
Spin.
It's like, what's going to happen?
Spin.
he said spin a number of times. What's going
to
come next?
Spin. Ah, I'm starting to twitch.
Stuck in a loop.
Spin far parsec. The Spin Far Parsec podcast. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh. It does not.
That was a lot of work for a lot of nothing.
It's got sillies.
Okay. So this may be jumping around a bit, but it is on the same subject. The part where Boimler was like, this is kind of bleeding to another part of the episode, but when Boimler's like, it's a bad story, and Mariner goes, yeah, it's an uneven slog that totally ignores the successes of the original, but it's also a Starfleet movie, aka Star Trek movie, but Star Trek doesn't exist, which means it's worth doing. And Boimler's like, yeah, it's a Starfleet movie. So the question is, do you think they were referring to a particular Star Trek episode or movie?
All of them.
Or do you think they were just kind of making a general sort of admission about, like, I guess, Star Trek?
I think it was just filling the role of, you got Star Trek V, you got Star Trek Insurrection, you have these movies that people find disappointing, but that there's still something worth being in there, you know?
Do you feel that way even about Nemesis?
No. I mean, I do. I think, okay, That we will at some point in the future discuss Nemesis more in a more detailed fashion. There's varied opinions in this room about
that. Would be a long episode, I think, because it's like when there's a bunch of fucked up
or
shit.
Or very short. Yeah, because my opinion of Nemesis is fairly simple. That's why I was willing to state it right now, which is it's almost pointless. There's just not much there. I just don't really enjoy it.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I have no problem with the people who do enjoy it, and I'm jealous. I wish I could get something out of it. Maybe I've waited a long time to watch it again, because who knows? Maybe I will have matured, or maybe I will have regressed. I don't know. Maybe something will make me enjoy it more.
You feel about Nemesis how some non-religious people feel about, like, are jealous of religious people, maybe.
I can imagine sort of an analogy.
Most non-religious people are not jealous of religious people, but it's not uncommon to hear someone say, I wish I believed in that, because then it would make life so much easier.
I understand the analogy. I think probably is more accurate just to state that in general, because I think this is something that I think most people can identify with, even if the particulars are not shared between me and the other people, which is you have a franchise, you love the franchise. The ideal scenario is that you are the type of person that can turn on any episode, any entry in that franchise at random and be happy to watch it and enjoy it. And that is not the case, unfortunately, for a very limited number of Star Trek episodes. Yeah. And Nemesis is probably the only movie where I'd be like kind of down if it was coming.
I wonder what's
on.
The most bummer of a Star Trek episode in terms of like just not cool to watch.
Yeah,
there's Code of Honor. But the thing is even Code of Honor in TNG, it's the super racist.
The Irish one?
With like the
Africans. That's also a fucked up one. No, it's with the African coded people with Tasha Yar getting in a fight. But honestly, as horrible as that episode is, it almost transcends into this is now an interesting thing to it's evidence that you can use in a social critique of that period of the 1980s in Hollywood.
Right. So there's something that you can gain something out of it, even if inadvertently they didn't mean for you to.
So fucked up that it's elevated to
it's worthy of analysis in that respect.
It is not totally devoid of some sort of intellectual utility.
Yeah. Hey, that was a pretty good way of putting it.
Whereas, I'm not going to argue for or against Nemesis in that regard, because I think Nemesis, I would argue that it just, they made some poor filmmaking decisions.
There's the one about like, I'm not a married man.
I like that one though.
A lot of people like that.
Was that Q who?
Q, yeah.
Is that Q who?
I'm like,
Deja Q. I always get.
Is it
Q Cupid?
Episode.
It might be Cupid.
It's got to be Cupid.
I think it's Cupid.
So, like, my feelings on that episode are a little complicated, because like that line is funny.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it is. But like, it's just the whole episode. I understand. It's the same thing.
It's not the best episode.
It's the thing where I understand why some people are charmed by it and like it, and I respect that, because I can understand why. But for me, I'm just kind of like,
the Fistful of Data's episode.
That one's just bad.
Fistful of Data's bad.
See, Cupid, I can respect. I can respect Cupid even if I don't particularly enjoy it. It's all good. But the Fistful of Data's like, it's not like I disrespect it, but you know what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I'm actively
there's other ones to watch.
There's a few Voyager.
So I'm all good with Cupid. I just want to be clear on that.
Have you seen this Lower Decks episode?
Oh, which one is that? Well, this one. Well, Lower Decks is all about commenting on other Star Trek. So I think as long as we're talking about Star Trek, we're good. We're
as
gravy.
Long as we talk about Star Trek on the podcast.
Would you drink bubbled?
Where is this going, man?
Carbonated gravy soda? Bubble tea?
What kind of gravy?
Would you drink gravy?
White pepper gravy?
No, brown gravy. Carbonated brown gravy bubble tea.
Is that a reference to Star Trek Lower Decks in some sense?
Was no.
Somebody drinking? So why are you bringing it up?
Bubble tea?
I don't know why I brought it
up. I'm cool. By the way, I'm cool with you bringing it up. I'm confused because you brought it up right after the talking about how things should be related to Star Trek. Because
I used that colloquialism. I said it's all gravy. Because like we were talking about Jesse was joning on us for not talking about Lower Decks, and I was like, well,
Jesse
all
was joning on us.
I was joning.
You're trying to
stay on task.
Yeah, you were trying to hurt us. Much respect.
He was calling us jabronis.
Right.
No. He was implying that we were being jabronis.
And I was like, hey, man, it's all gravy. And then I started to think about carbonated gravy drinks, and then I started thinking about bubble tea because I said bubulated.
Started thinking about carbonated gravy drinks.
Yeah, so, because but I said bubbled gravy drinks, and that made me think of bubble tea. So I thought gravy bubble tea.
Would boba tea just be a glass of gravy and just like chunks of like mashed potato or something?
Chunks of giblet.
Carbonated tea doesn't work.
Oh, peas. You can just have peas. Gravy or how about just some green peas vegetarian instead of boba pearls?
Okay, well, sure.
Instead of tapioca pearls.
I was thinking of
green
just
peas.
That sounds better.
Okay,
than
I was thinking boba.
Like sweet peas.
I was thinking about. Yeah. Okay, I was thinking
kernels
about
of corn.
Okay, yes.
Or melon balls. Melon balls.
I was thinking about just boba jello, but like you were. That's fine. It's fine. However you want to have your carbonated gravy bubble tea is okay with me. You could probably carbonate it. You could probably carbonate it by using one of them soda streams. You could just stick it in there. You'd ruin your soda stream, probably.
All right. How about this?
Ooh, yeah.
How about this?
It's
about
take a break.
It's about time we take a break.
God,
so
we didn't even talk about anything, did we?
Because you're handing me a paper towel, sir.
We're gonna take a quick break. So please enjoy this word from our sponsor, Tom Johnson's Gravy Boba Tea.
Carbonated
Gravy Boba Tea.
Boba Tea.
And
Boba
we'll tea. Be Boba right back.
Boba Tea.
We're back.
Silvo Toussaint.
Gravy. That's what it would be in the commercial. There'd be a bunch of kids going, gravy.
Kids don't say, gravy.
Can I have an extra large?
Extra large.
Kids don't even like gravy.
Kids like gravy.
Some like it chunky. Some like it not.
I like gravy.
I'd drink gravy any day.
All right. The It's Got Star Trek podcast. Lower Decks Season 3.
I like
Episode
gravy.
8.
Oh my gosh.
Crisis Point 2.
Chronogami.
Paradoxus.
This takes place in the Vindictiverse.
Yes, or that's what Boimler, you know, was trying to expand upon the Vindictiverse, but Mariner of course had some issues.
It's kind of funny that they've got this whole like Star Trek franchise I mean, I know it's not uncommon to kind of have that sort of idea of self-referential humor,
nested
but
meta reference.
But it's like they have the whole Starfleet movie franchises, all the franchises starting to be created within like the show. So they'll definitely have more of these episodes. I
should hope so.
Yeah.
I think it's a good framework for doing the emotional heavy lifting in an environment that is where the stakes are the emotional stakes and not the life stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that benefits that. Like that's what's good about a lot of hologram episodes, holodeck episodes.
Because it's like their time off, and so they have time to reflect instead of like time to
but you still
work
time to stress
mission.
Out
but yeah. You still feel like it's progressing things like in terms of the characters. I want to say that like so this is another one of those episodes you could compare it to the what was last week's called with the exocomp with
Mathematically Perfect Redemption.
That's right. So you could.
And it was the Elysian Kingdom, which for some reason all three of us fucking forgot the name of the Elysian Kingdom. We kept referencing the Strange New Worlds episode.
Oh, right. We forgot the
Elysian Kingdom. We kept saying Elysian, whatever. Whatever. We're
something.
Old. Our brains don't work.
Oh, we don't care.
Yeah.
We don't.
Well, I mean, but we do.
But we do, but we can't
beat
care
ourselves
too much
up about it.
Because we'll get really sad if we do, because we can't help it, because we're old.
But you said this is another episode.
So let me
that dot dot dot
that dot dot dot,
dot, dot, dot.
And that dot 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 is as follows:
ellipses.
Colon ellipses. It's got that similar vibe, only in the sense that you're taking a break from like what's going on. And what I say is take a break from what's going on because
take a vacation from your problem.
It's a side adventure.
It's not like it's not the same as going to Ryza and romping around on Ryza. This is like they're exiting from all forms of plot. There's nothing going on in the regular world. They're off in their own holodeck world.
Right.
So it's kind of separate universe in that respect. You could look at it like
that's got all the characters, but most of the characters are holograms.
You got Star Trek.
You could look at it like that Fly episode on
a little bit of
that we talked about this last week. That Fly episode on
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And what was that other reference we used?
The Man Who Shot Liberty
Valance. Facts of Life.
The Facts of Life. No, the Lost episode. So you, but in
Facts of Life.
So I'm saying you
empty nest.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Guys, you guys gotta calm down. Just like calm down. Just like for a second here.
I am calm.
No, you're not, because you can't go 2 seconds without interjecting, and not just talking to you, Jesse. I'm talking mostly about both of you.
Mostly about both of you. Different strokes.
So you could say that they're very... Now it's going to be impossible for you to fucking stay quiet. Now you're just like exploding with things to say that are nonsense.
I'm not talking... I'm not... I know this may be one of those situations where we're just a little too close for comfort.
I remember, like, I think it was last week or the week before I kept interrupting you and you freaked out and were like, let me just finish my point. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Interesting. I find myself going and saying, interesting, that pisses you off a lot. Yeah. So, you know, look, all I'm saying is that this episode shares some in common with last week's episode in the sense, what is so
long? I'm sorry, I'm listening. I've worked myself into a situation where the names of 1980s sitcoms keep flowing through my head, and it's taking every ounce of my energy not to interrupt
you. It shouldn't take every ounce of your energy, though.
Cheers. I wholeheartedly agree.
That's something wrong with you.
I agree.
You're certifiable in some way.
I 100% agree with you. I'm apologizing. But please, I'm very interested in your point.
It's not a normal thing to be like that.
I agree. 100%. Punky Brewster.
They had the Punky Brewster cartoon, and she had a weird gerbil monster for some reason in the cartoon.
Yeah, the cartoon was... I was more into the cartoon.
I was, too. Yeah. Made less sense.
Yeah. It was certainly better than the Small Wonder.
Oh. I am Vicky.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy marijuana and put it under this plant. I am a robot, but yeah. I didn't do it perfectly. The plant is a little askew, so my dad will find it and then be worried. That was the episode where she got free pot because the dealer was trying to like get her hooked on pot.
Yeah, because back in the 80s, happened. You just get free drugs.
Yeah, right.
The more expensive, the more free it was.
Right.
Because of the Republicans.
Okay,
I'll try to make this fast.
Excellent.
Okay, egg salad. So it's kind of got that vibe of sort of an exodus of from your normal sort of TV show sort of
things
going on because it's in its own thing. But I I've expressed that's those kinds of things are hit or miss with audiences and me alike. And me and audience. I am separate from you, audience peeves.
Is that true though?
You are a reviewer. You are a podcaster.
No, those episodes in general can be hit or miss. And as can be shown by last week, how you guys really liked the Peanut Hamper episode last week. I didn't dislike the episode last week.
You were neutral.
I was neutral on it. I thought it was fine. And I know that
neutral
it
milk
wasn't,
hotel.
It wasn't meant to be like an inner light or the one with the date. I always keep to thine own self.
Yes. It's just called thine own self.
Thine own self. I always get it wrong. I always add...
The line is to thine own self true.
What are those types of words called when you say to and the, all those words?
Articles?
Articles. I keep adding articles to my titles.
Well,
my
the is an article.
To is a preposition.
Two is a preposition.
Yeah. Grammar. The math of words that I never understood.
Kelsey grammar.
We're always ready to smack you with some... You can't say it like that. Right. Shouldn't you have said it like this?
Language is an evolving concept.
I understand the Peanut Hamper episode wasn't supposed to be some exploration onto visiting another planet. The whole that whole episode to me felt
penis
like
hamster.
That episode felt like just a setup for the joke. That whole episode was just a setup for the punchline, which is spoiler alerts if you haven't watched last week's episode.
That you should have watched it. Come
on, man,
you gotta keep
up.
You gotta keep up.
It was for the punchline of how Peanut Hamper reacts to the situation. That's what the whole episode was. And that sometimes, I'm not always into episodes of things that are just all there just for the punchline. Although the punchline was good. It was a good punchline. It was a fine episode. Okay, the reason I'm saying all this stuff is because even though this episode has that similar sort of world of separating from the main flow of the show, I really like this episode. And see, I think they did it awesomely. What we were just talking about, how they take this episode and they're off in their own hologram world. And Jesse, like you said, you know, they're still and Patrick, both of you said, they're still sort of contributing. They're still sort of moving it's emotional, you know, it's not there's not a physical plot going
it's
on.
It's the emotional stakes.
Emotional stakes. Exactly. And so I want to make it very clear that even though this had similar vibes as the last episode, in certain respects, in other ways, it was totally different. I was really into it, and I'm not everything has to be plot all the time. I like that they sort of move things forward and
explored. They're being themselves because they're on R&R.
Mm-hmm.
They have time off.
Rest and relaxation.
They're playing a game.
Yeah, they're just playing a game.
You know.
And the way they played the game is it wasn't they just played a game and it was separate from what was going on, they tied it together with they kept it anchored into their relationships and stuff.
And they're all approaching the game in different ways because firstly you have Boimler, who His motivation shifts right at the beginning, right? Because his initial motivation is he's just trying to have some fun, so almost showing off his extension of what he's done, you know, what he's built upon Mariner's Crisis Point Vindicta Universe world. But then when he finds out, you know, he believes that William Boimler, his clone, he learns that he's died and died in sort of a silly way. Mm-hmm. He's now having an existential crisis. And it was super fascinating watching this episode the second and third time through, because it's such a different episode when you know what's going on, even though, again, it's sort of predictable. You can guess something's going on. I didn't immediately guess it was about his clone.
Right.
Right. But when you know all that, it takes on, like, all his actions throughout the episode take on a very different feel.
And it was fascinating how he's delving into, like, the layers of, like, the holodex AI to try to figure out the meaning. And which is really interesting, this idea that you're getting to the source of something. And he is. He's getting to the source of, like, the holodeck AI, which is, like, kind of analogous to getting to the source of meaning. And, he gets to it, and it's just total nonsense because it's an AI. But I like the commentary along the way where it's like, we don't think about these non-player characters or whatever, you know, and now Mariner keeps Mariner keeps pointing it out. She's like, oh, the computer's just building a backstory for this one, you know.
Yeah, on,
like,
the fly.
Yeah, right. You know, Knick-Knack was pretty hilarious. And I like how Mariner came around to this the whole story and stuff, but that part was super fascinating to me. And, like, right, yeah, and Tendi had her own way of,
well, Tendi's whole thing was she was also just sort of having fun along with so Mariner, Tendi, and Rutherford initially are just hanging out having fun. Mariner starts taking it a little seriously in the sense that she sees something's up with Boimler. She's kind of bitter and annoyed at Boimler. He's on her turf, basically, right, this whole thing, right? So she's aggravated with him. He's dealing with his emotional turmoil from blah, 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 clone dying. Tendi is just chilling until Boimler puts her in command, and then she starts taking it real fucking seriously, right? Because we learn that she has this unvoiced desire to be in command someday.
And that also is plays into the sort of idea of what Boimler's looking for, because he's trying to struggle to find meaning in all this. That classic, like, everything's random, like, the randomly, like, how is there meaning in all that stuff? She's trying to figure out what's it all mean. It's like my clone, he's at the station where I wanted to be stationed, but because of weirdness happened, like a clone happened, and then they die for a stupid reason. There's no meaning in the world, right? And so that's the crisis he's going through. But because he's having that crisis, that's the whole reason that Tendi is given a shot. Now, who knows? Maybe down the line she would have been given another shot. But the point is it happened this way now, and it just goes to show it's like the flip side of, like, the randomness, which actually Sulu kind of addresses
at
the end.
That's what Sulu's all about.
Yeah, so you can look at Sulu's point by the Boimler bummed out side and the Tendi awesome side was all...
Sulu literally says reflection. Mm. Reflection. Reflection. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say it three times, but, you know, the reflection is something that it's a reflection.
Rutherford is,
it is a reflection.
Is sort of in an interesting place because he's the most, he's just kind of there hanging out. He doesn't really give a shit about, he's just doing it. He's just hanging out with everybody while they're on the holodeck.
I mean, Silco Toussaint.
He's getting snacks. Like, did he fart, or did he just make a fart noise with his mouth?
Well,
like,
it's ambiguous.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The
closed captioning said it was a raspberry, but he has this
attitude like he doesn't care when he's normally the guy that's always working on a puzzle.
Right.
There's that episode where the whole engineering staff was overworked.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, right.
We don't usually see him in a where he's just like, not only is he's not doing anything, but he doesn't give a shit. And Tendi's all like, come on, Rutherford, like, at least try to play alongside. Right.
And he's
like,
reading the room.
He's totally not reading the room. He does, and the only time he finally starts giving a shit is when Tendi expresses that, like, I'm care because I'm a captain. He's like, oh, well, no shit,
right,
of course.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, there's silly Rutherford moments. Yeah, he does this weird fake Cajun accent. When it was Cisco.
Are you going to try to do that weird fake Cajun accent?
No, there's not a chance.
You're not going to try it?
No, Silco Toussaint. I wonder if that was supposed to be like Cisco to. Never mind. No. I don't know.
Silco.
Probably not.
Silco is the name of a character in Arcane, in the Arcane cartoon.
Oh, that was a good cartoon.
Which is a very good cartoon.
It's probably unrelated, but.
Probably.
Yeah. I'm not going to do. Do you want to do. Does anyone else want to do a Cajun accent?
I don't do Cajun accents.
No. I don't either. No. I can go like,
they are hard.
I can do like, remember.
What's even harder to do is a Creole accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an even harder one.
Yeah.
Which is which? I couldn't even tell you.
You don't even hear that one too much.
Oh, the Creole one is the more French one?
Well, that's the one that's more like the city. The Cajuns which
is,
are out in the country.
Which is the one that Ninja Turtle character Leatherhead, remember that crocodile leather, or if it was an alligator rather, Leatherhead from the Ninja Turtle cartoon?
I do remember Leatherhead.
And he was always like, I guarantee.
That's
like,
a Cajun accent.
That's Cajun accent.
Yeah. The okay. guarantee shit.
Yeah. What about the Rat King? What accent was he?
I was blown away that a Rat King is a real thing. That's,
oh yeah, Rat King is a real
fucked up.
But in
it's
real
a bunch
life,
of rats creating a monster organism.
Okay. Yeah, it's just when the rats' tails get glued together from all the feces and saliva.
It's
and
disgusting.
Stuff. It's not a dude with red hair and a bandana.
No, right. But it is some kind of weird, turns into a weird like meta organism thing. So he does the weird Cajun accent. He gives the raspberry right before the movie starts.
Raspberry.
And then Tendi tells him to shut up. Then when he goes, whoa, these graphics are mind blowing. When that's when Gibson's explaining the timeline chrono issues, which is we were talking about, like the X-Wing graphics.
It smells like fried Romulan.
Yeah, right. Well, so there's a part where they're on the planet and he's getting a sandwich during the time travel light show because he says makes him sick.
He said he gets seasick.
And that's when Tendi gets pissed. She's like, you're not taking this seriously.
It's a big old sandwich.
And he's like, you're right, I'm not taking it seriously. Yeah. And at first it seems all like, well, fuck you, but really he just doesn't get it because that was like a pretty good looking chip sandwich he got there.
A big old sandwich and a big bag of chips. Like a lunch bag of chips.
Yeah, you're putting them on the sandwich. It's good. And then Rutherford steals the old timey.
You gotta have chips.
The old timey outfits of the punks. Tendi gets mad.
So he couldn't fit in the pants.
And then
don't fit.
And then at the very end, when he keeps going choo choo because he has that choo choo song stuck in his head, which is awesome. And that's when he says the smells like fried Romulan in here, which is when he's really having trouble reading the room, as Patrick was saying. So, and then that's when she kind of loses it because she's like crying. She's like crying over fucking what's her name? Tana, dying. And then he says it smells like fried Romulan. It's like that's pretty brutal. Yeah. So
this is kind of like.
But that's when he comes around and is like, yeah, it's a game. Who cares? Like, and so you think he's being a dick at first, but really he just doesn't get it. But then when Tendi's explains to him that, like, no, this means a lot to me because of A, B, and C, he's like, or mostly just A, that's when he's like, oh, well, no shit, yeah, well, I'm on board, see, because he isn't clueless, he's just kind of has trouble reading the room, right? Anyway, what were you saying, Jesse?
Well, it's like when there's the episode where he has, like, his older personality takes over, but it's so like he's just like this jerk with a bad attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that where he's like he's like acting out.
Yeah, he is acting out. He's totally acting out. I get the sense that Patrick is doing a good job of holding back. I feel like because he's sitting there like spinning back and forth with this smile on his face, and I think he's got like an encyclopedia and a dictionary's worth of words flying through his head that he wants to spew out, and he's being very mindful and polite and not doing that. But I can tell he wants to.
What, like silver spoons?
Okay. Maybe
Hill Street Blues.
Taxi.
Maybe I got a little
Golden Girls.
Maybe I got a little worked up a minute ago.
No, that's all good. It's all good.
Perfect Strangers.
Too close for comfort.
I already said too close for comfort.
Oh fuck.
You know the
but
guy
you were really mad at me at that stage. you didn't hear me say
it.
You
really mad at me.
That guy from Perfect Strangers is on She-Hulk. He's the dad. He's her dad.
Yeah,
that's who that is. Yeah. I thought I recommend Larry
Mark Lynn Baker. Yeah, Larry Appleton.
That's where
he's
really good as
her dad.
I'm wondering where I recognize that guy.
Well, now you know.
Oh,
and that's what I'm here for.
Is half the battle.
That's Benson? Why I'm on the podcast.
Benson is great, and Benson is a spinoff of Soap.
Benson's got that guy that was Neelix.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. It was a spinoff
Neelix?
Of Soap.
Benson had Neelix?
Ethan Phillips was on Benson. Because
it also had Renee
Auberjonois.
Yeah,
for real, dude.
Yeah, I didn't know there was so many.
Huh.
Huh.
Mm. Oh.
I remember the Too Close for Comfort theme song goes like.
That's a good one.
It was like elevator music. It was weird.
It was a weird television program as well.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
You know, it was a weird theme song. I got this because I was watching that Rick and Morty episode.
That was a great one.
I was watching a Rick and Morty.
Okay,
I was watching a Rick and Morty episode recently, and they brought up the theme song to MASH.
Yes,
and like that
suicide is painless.
Like that was that is. I'm sorry, not MASH. I'm sorry, I didn't. I wasn't MASH.
Oh, so you got it wrong.
I got
you
it wrong.
Changed direction.
No, no, it was to Taxi. Taxi.
Oh yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, that's, MASH it's
is.
A, it's like a
Taxi.
Trumpet.
Is a, yeah, Taxi is sort of also a melancholy a
trumpet,
yeah.
Right
for a comedy. Sitcom, it's a melancholy-ish.
It's got this weird, yeah, it is. It's
but
got
so
this
is
weird,
MASH. MASH is also.
Well, I think that's why I got him confused yeah. because like they both have this sort of like. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to not like the Taxi music for some reason.
What freaked me out?
It's upsetting.
It is yeah. upsetting because it's got that weird flute intro and the weird like electric piano and it's all jazzy. And the song itself is good, but paired with the imagery of this taxi going through like where?
Yeah, like that horrible bridge sequence.
Yeah, yeah, it's
driving
just
driving over like the.
It doesn't match.
Williamsburg Bridge or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't match in this way. That like makes me feel like I'm in an Oogie place.
What about the Night Court theme?
No, that was awesome. Yeah, that
was remember at band practice when you'd always play the Night Court music on the bass?
Oh, did I? Were you sure that wasn't Pat? I didn't play the bass in band. I played trombone.
You played the bass in the band.
Oh, in the band. Oh, you're not school, not school band.
In our awesome oh, rock band.
Yeah, right. That's right. You're right. I did do
where
that.
You were the bass player.
That's true. I forgot about that.
I didn't play bass in the band. That was bad.
Okay, you're right. I forgot that I played that.
All right.
Yeah, because it was a cool bass line.
So, Lower Decks.
Oh, man.
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks.
Lower Decks.
So Lower Decks.
Nick
Lower
Nick. Decks.
Lower Decks. Lower Decks. Lower Decks. Lower Decks. They make fun of women characters written by men that are there to support men. Yes. By giving Dr. Helena Gibson an existential crisis when Boimler doesn't care about her.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is, it's like creepy and sad because she's like, I don't know what
yeah.
to do.
It's like, but I don't know what to tell you, lady.
But it's really got that gives it that satirical bite
yeah.
because it's really just making fun of like those yeah. kinds of characters written and like now that they don't have anything to do, it's like now they're like, what if this was a real person? And it's really sad. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Thought that was cool. I like that awesome face Freeman was making when
he freezes the program.
When they freeze
the
program.
The program.
Yeah, yeah, because it's true. Have you ever done that? Has this ever happened to you?
I do it all the time.
Where you like pause the thing and they make it some weird
I'm
face.
I'm watching TV and like, you know, my baby starts crying and I pause the TV.
You're like, baby, I'm all here for you. Don't cry, baby.
Baby, don't cry.
Baby, don't cry.
I'll pause the TV.
The way you said that, Jesse, it could be interpreted either your child or your baby.
I was talking about my
baby
child.
Crying.
I'm a character. I speak in a funny sort of way.
They had a bunch of funny references to the conceit of this cinematic holodeck program. Perhaps one of the most silly, but also I thought most clever and funny somehow was when Mariner is leaving the holodeck and has to step over the letterboxing in the door.
That. I missed that. That's
it's
funny.
It's great because she's like, she's in the middle of sort of, she's having an argument with Boimler. She's a little frustrated. And so she's leaving. And as she leaves, she's yelling at him or whatever, talking to him. And she has to step over the black bar at the bottom of the screen because it's cinematic mode. Extra widescreen.
Yeah. And they do that effect with like the flecks of dust or whatever.
The
like,
film grain.
Film grain. That's
film grain. They didn't push the, what do you call it? The lens flares as much, but there's a little bit of that, which was something in the first Crisis Point. They were making a lot of fun of the 2009 Star Trek movie and that sort of whole series of movies with all the lens flares that J.J. Abrams introduced into that aesthetic.
I hope they have more of these. These are good episodes.
They're fun. I enjoy the Crisis Point holographic things. So how about this? We'll take another break and then we can finish up. We'll talk a little bit about the resolution to this story with Sulu. We'll go into a little bit more detail on that. And as well as wrap up any other little things going on there. All right. So we
odds
will be
ends,
right back.
All your favorite segments.
All right, we're back. We've returned. You finally remember that.
Burder doodle doo 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 doodle doo doodle doo. Boo 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 doodle doo doo boo doo doo.
Oh, that's right. That's how. Boo doo boo boo doo boo doo. I think I blocked it out.
Yeah, the taxi theme. The MASH one is all like.
I know the MASH one. Yeah.
And that song, the lyrics are about something sad.
The lyrics aren't in the TV show, but they're. Yeah.
I like the MASH theme, and I also like the taxi theme, but the taxi theme does not mesh well with the imagery of the taxi opening. Because, like you said, it's on that fucking bridge looking all grimy, and then you've got this, like, kind of
super grimy, like old school New York City.
It could be weird. It could be that there may be a disconnect in terms of the blue collar nature of the theme song and the trade that the sitcom is focusing on, in this case, being a taxi driver and the ancillary positions surrounding that.
We were sort of born in the suburbs, so we have this bias against.
We do have perhaps a class bias that makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah. I know.
With the blue collarness.
We were bourgeois. We didn't even know it.
I'm fine with taxi on its own. I'm saying the intro imagery combined with the intro music is off to me.
I understand and I agree with you. I'm positing that you and I may have that disconnect. We may feel that disconnect because we do not have an appreciation for the sadness of being a taxi driver. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know nothing about no taxi driving.
We are pretty fancy. We are pretty fancy.
I mean, you're the fanciest of us all.
Yeah.
they call you fancy.
They
Dan.
They call me Fop Boy Dan.
Fancy Dan.
Did you say Frot Boy Dan?
Fop Boy. Is it bad to say Fop?
Fop?
That's not bad, is it?
I don't know. If I don't.
Only, it's not bad to be a fop.
It's like 1700 stuff.
Are you like foppish? Is you're saying you're foppish?
Like that's for like that. When I was watching, like,
are you a little Lord Fauntleroy? Is that what you're saying, little Lord Fauntleroy?
When I was watching the movie,
prancing about in your velveteen jacket.
What was that? Velveteen?
On the ground.
What was it?
The
gentleman knows the difference.
It's like it's velvet, not velveteen. Yeah. A gentleman must know the difference. give me something a jangle. I don't know.
Oh, give room service a jangle and have them send up some étouffée.
King of the hill.
King of
That's
the
hill.
That's it. I was watching the movie Amadeus when I was like really.
Amadeus.
When I was really. When I was really
Falco.
When I was really young, I was watching.
I think he died in Jamaica.
See,
yeah.
See, this is when I have to start over and over again.
Yes,
he's buried in Vienna, though.
You asked me earlier off air why I start over my sentences sometimes, and this is why. I'm just saying. No hard feelings. No hard feelings. I'm not trying to tell anything to anyone. When I was watching Amadeus as a kid, I was like, why do they wear wigs and wear those? Why do they wear
powdered wigs
and why do they wear those long, like, fancy clothes? And my mom said something about them being fops, and that's when I first heard the term. So now I'm wondering, is fop like, is that
so
like.
You learned it from your mother.
I learned it from my mother. Is that, could that be construed as like, you know, not something that's quite cool to say?
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know, because you only hear about it referred to people in like the 1700s, right? Like you don't hear it, or 1700s.
I mean,
you don't hear about it now.
You're talking about a movie and play from the 1980s.
Like,
so
like,
it could be.
Well, we're like,
and your mother was the one who said the term. It wasn't in the movie. So
it's like
I don't know.
It's like Tim Roth's character in the Liam Neeson.
Tim Roth.
It's like
Tim Roth.
It's like the Tim Roth character in the Liam Neeson movie Rob Roy. He was a fop.
In Tim, Tim Roth was a fop in Rob Roy.
Yeah.
He was also in, he was not a fop, but he was in She-Hulk, of course.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with
reprising his role.
That has absolutely nothing to do with what
as
we're
talking about. The abomination.
That's absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about, though.
It has
but
something
it is,
to do with Tim Roth.
Yeah, but the point,
is
but the subject.
Information associated with
no,
Tim
that's
Roth.
Free.
And you mentioned Tim Roth?
No, free association is not like something to be proud of. Like, free association happens because due to a lack of filter. The subject of my statement had nothing to do with Tim Roth. The subject of my statement had to do with fops and examples of foppery. So, you know, and that jumping that to over to She-Hulk, you're just trying at that point you're just changing
not a fop.
At that point you're just changing the subject to talk about something else.
A little bit.
Okay. As long as we're on the same page here.
I just liked any excuse to say Tim Roth.
So Knick Knack, is there anything to say about Knick Knack?
Knick Knack was cool.
He got had all them little arms on.
Yeah. Not much to this is one of those episodes where there's like a lot of entertaining things in there. It's fun to go on Reddit or so Facebook, you know, one of the Facebook groups or something, and read down a list of all the little things that they mentioned.
Did you make a list?
I did not make a list because I figured other people.
Guy over here.
Dan may have made a list.
I already spake my lists, my lists of places they were at, the platitudes,
the
and silly Rutherford.
Thus spake your list.
I just spake my list.
Zathura. Zarathura.
So
Zoroastrian.
Well, there was a reference within the show. With Ransom's friends, there was Honus the bartender, Nurse Westlake, and Matt the Whale, from Cetacean Ops, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So his beluga buddy.
Maybe
beluga
buddy. Come up at some point in the future.
Do you notice when they were in the Great Sulian Algae Crisis, there was some dude walking by with like algae on his head?
Yeah, it was just a bunch of algae. algae stuff. Everyone learned about that when we were kids. Yeah.
But this is the part, I guess, where I kind of cut into before when I was talking about, it's a Starfleet movie, you know, and they were talking about some Starfleet movies. Are uneven. The whole portion of that was when Boimler was all bummed out. First of all, when after Mariner found out from Ransom that Boimler's clone had died, she came back and Boimler was sitting there all bummed out. By the way, do you notice what were those bags under his eyes? Do you think he was crying or do you think he was just tired? He had bags under his eyes.
I mean, probably a little of both.
Yeah. Like they made it a point to have bags under their eyes.
When you're grieving, it's very exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting. But, so Boimler goes, I'm trying to make this dumb movie important just to prove that I'm not, what was I saying? Oh, great. Now I've already fucked it up.
Should have put it on the list.
I guess I was trying to make all this matter because then I would matter, but trying to make this dumb movie important just prove that I'm not or something. I don't know.
He did say that at some point.
Yeah. And she goes, right. And so here's the part I'm getting at. She goes, it's just a holodeck program, you know, trying to make him feel better. But that actually makes him feel worse because he's like, no, I'm stupid. That's a good point.
He really idolizes that Tom Paris guy. And Tom Paris is always coming up with like awesome holodeck programs that impress everybody. And, you know.
So he takes pride in it. So basically what she's saying, she's trying to make him feel better, being like, oh, don't worry if the holodeck program doesn't work out. It's not a big deal. It's just a holodeck program.
It is a big deal.
It is a big deal because she might think she's helping by telling him not to worry about things that aren't important. But saying that, she is really just implying that something that's important to him is actually unimportant.
Yeah, right.
Which is bad. And it's important to him to make this thing. And it's important to sort of express himself and do this thing this own way. And for her to sort of minimize it by saying like, oh, it's just a silly thing, you know. And I thought that was an astute take on the situation.
Especially since she, of all people, should have understood the therapeutic value in that. Since the first one was all about that, fundamentally.
I didn't think about that, about Tom.
Selective amnesia.
Diabetes. I didn't think about that, about the Tom Paris making cool holodeck programs, how you were talking about. Yeah. A lot of people made cool holodeck programs.
Tom Paris was all
about
it.
He made a lot.
Yeah, he did.
He was all about it.
And you're right,
Boimler. The Fairhaven business.
Yeah. And Boimler does idolize Tom Paris.
Yeah.
Captain Proton.
All that Captain Proton nonsense. The Fairhavens.
There's a couple other ones.
We did
too.
A whole podcast about that.
Yeah. We did the Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. That was just Jesse and I. Where we drank too
spirits.
Much. We decided, oh, it would be fun to drink some Irish whiskey while we discuss these two episodes.
Well, was it like for St. Patrick's Day? It wasn't even that, was it?
I don't think we had that excuse. I think
let's drink a lot on the podcast.
I think we were just, let's just do these two episodes.
Do something different.
Yeah, I love both. I honestly really enjoyed both Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. Which a lot of people complain about. A lot of people don't like those episodes. I think those people are silly. Those are fun episodes. But when we discussed them, Jesse and I were very drunk. And Dan
at least
was,
by the end
Dan
we
was
were.
Like out of town somewhere.
By the end, it was just a mess.
It was.
If you're listening to this, you probably listened to that already.
Yeah. And if you haven't, go listen to that. It's fun. You don't even need to watch. You don't even need to watch the TV episodes. So Mariner it's not an unusual thing for her to not be able to see the hypocrisy that in that she's somebody who's used the holodeck for therapy before and is giving Boimler problems, you know, she's giving him a hard time about that or not recognizing that that's what he's doing, one way or the other. So, yeah, but it's fine. It's not like it's a plot problem or anything like
plot
that.
Plot problem.
It's all in character and it all works very well.
Well, so the impression I'm getting is, I don't know what Jesse thought of the episode. Patrick, I'm impressed that I'm getting from you.
And you never will.
I never. God damn it. I'm getting the impression that you liked it, but you didn't think it was all that.
I know. I enjoyed it. I thought the points that it made were good points. It's just, I don't know. There's just not a tremendous amount to discuss about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was well executed. Lots of funny jokes. Good Easter eggs spread around from most of the cinematic universe.
So you felt like you got more enjoyment from, and this is totally cool if you do, difference is the spice of life or something like that, or something to do with
variety.
So would you, variety. Would you like, you like the mathematically mathematical math better than this episode?
Well, I won't.
Exocomp. Look, peanut hamper episode
that I found last week's episode, A Mathematically Perfect Redemption, to be somewhat more challenging, interesting. It was more out there. It was more of an experimental thing for Star Trek generally, and Lower Decks in particular. I thought it was an exercise in sort of leveraging the maturity of the program now that it's most of the way through the third season.
You said most of the way through.
Most of the way the third season, and has developed its own lore in addition to.
It is interesting that they remembered Peanut Hamper and they're continuing. Yeah. I do like that they didn't forget about Peanut Hamper.
That they
forgot about Peanut Hamper.
I could have forgot about Peanut.
It's like forgetting about Dre. You can't forget about Peanut Hamper.
About Dre.
There's pluses and minuses every time you, or potentially pluses and minuses every time you stretch yourself a little and experiment a little beyond the normal form of your television program.
But there's a respect in doing so.
But yeah, I have a certain respect in doing that. I very much enjoyed this episode. I thought that it's very well written. I thought the jokes were good. Mm-hmm. I thought it was emotional. This is high on my list. This is another, as far as I'm concerned, there's not a single episode of Lower Decks that I have not been impressed with and enjoyed at some level or another. It's all relative to each other, right? This was in some ways a little bit derivative, both
yes,
directly because they're doing jokes and funny plays on them.
That's true. It was.
There was a little less undermining of tropes in this one. Last week was a lot of here's the Lower Decks, here's the Star Trek trope, and now we're gonna surprise you by undermining it. Mm-hmm. This one was more like here's the thing, and it's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
And most of the cleverness was just in how deep some of the references were. Like you mentioned, Dan, that the planet Shatnari, which is a extra meta reference to the fact that they have this end scene with Sulu on Kirk's Idaho farm cabin place from Star Trek Generations. In real life, they had attempted, the producers of Lower Decks had attempted to get William Shatner, and they were unable to secure William Shatner, so they got Sulu. And of course, Boimler has that great joke. Was like, oh, that's Captain Sulu. That's even better.
Even better, right? Yeah, there's like a throwaway. Oh, you could almost miss it, but like it was. Like,
which I think it was better.
Yeah,
but it's a now they have that they added in this name, the planet of Shatnari, which is a joke on the planet Shakari from Star Trek V. And Shakari was the name of the planet that the producers gave the name. They used that name because originally for the character of Cybok, they were trying to get Sean Connery to play Cybok, Spock's brother.
Shit.
And he was very close to signing, but they couldn't work it out because of scheduling concerns, I think, with
that always screws
Last
it
Crusade.
Cost too much money.
You know,
I think in that case, it was The Last Crusade.
I think I heard that
so the planet was named Shakari, Sean nerds, Connery.
Shakari.
That's the point. And so here it's Shatnari is because they couldn't get Shatner to play the role that's like an extra I dig that. That's kind of an awesome like deep cut. This is still repetitive in some ways. It's still derivative of other Star Trek stuff and Crisis Point.
Maybe I'm just a that's how it is kind of guy.
And I'm fine with that.
I don't even know what that means.
The other planet was called like Tadis something.
That's Tadis Shore.
That was the name of one of the actors on the show.
Who plays Shax. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
That's a roundabout way of saying that I very much enjoyed it. A lot. And this has good rewatchability value. Because
it's interesting, but you actually
get more out of the story the second time
around. You were more delighted about the mathematical math calculus.
I wasn't sure where things were going last week, and I like that. Whereas this week, I figured out.
You know where
I didn't know the particulars, but the structure of the story was very straightforward this week, which is Boimler obviously got some news that upset him, and he was then obviously using the holodeck program as a means to dealing with whatever this news was, and then we find out this news is the death of his clone, which is it's a fascinating thing,
right.
But still, it's like okay.
Well, I guess to me, yes.
That's why watching it a second time through was extra interesting.
You're right in that it is got that, in that aspect, it is derivative. That this episode is kind of like, in that sense, though, about like, it's kind of like, we already know what the stakes are and all this stuff. It's just kind of how we're getting there. And that's what I found interesting. Whereas, like I was saying before about the last week's, it was more about the punchline. And you could say there were aspects of that that were, I mean, the whole point of the episode was to be derivative of like that style of like Stranger in a Strange Land kind of.
Last week they undermine the expectations, and this week they do an excellent job of giving you feeding into your expectations in very excellent ways. So
yeah, there's all delightful. Well, so
my tone keeps sounding like criticism, but it's not.
No, no. I enjoyed it. But. No. I didn't ask you if you didn't like it. I asked you which made you feel a little more tingly in the pantaloons. Was it the pantaloons?
This was more of a sit back and watch. Mm-hmm. Others are more like lean forward and watch.
Yeah, so I just think
I think this was a sit back and watch a little bit more.
Which one did you enjoy more, Jesse? Or is that question of more kind of a bullshit question?
I enjoyed them both. I mean, this one, it was still an enjoyable episode. You know, mm-hmm. It just wasn't like a groundbreaking episode.
No, it wasn't groundbreaking.
It was a callback to another episode. Mm-hmm. It was a thing like where a lot of cartoon shows do a repeat of like, this is the episode where we do this kind of thing. And it was perfectly fine to do that.
Right.
And
so
they did their own style, and it was had all the delightful little lower decks bits.
So it's interesting. Both of you, if you had to pick one of the episodes to take and snuggle with, you would pick the mathematical one.
Which one do you like
mathematically
better?
What is it called again?
A mathematically perfect redemption.
A mathematically perfect redemption. You two would choose to snuggle with that episode, and I would choose to snuggle with this episode.
No, I don't think I would say.
If you had to pick one,
if I had to pick one to watch
figuratively
speaking, again, it would be this is the episode I'd watch over and over again. The last week's episode would be too much for me to watch over and over and over again. But
it's too thought provoking.
The last week's episode, that's the reason I don't want to watch it over and over again, is because it does its thing, it's interesting, it's weird, mm-hmm. I agree with you in the sense that it's in the end it's somewhat slight, but that slightness serves a greater function of some very interesting.
One is a series of jokes.
Yes.
Well, okay. That's kind of like the last one was a little bit too.
I don't know. This one had character development.
To me, it was her Peanut Hamper's reaction to like that classic scenario.
Yeah.
And that was, well, anyways, look, you've all been giving very thoughtful answers, and the impression I'm getting, these are good answers.
Really? You think so?
But when it comes to the idea, you're basically saying the question of which is better is a dumb question. So that's fair enough.
I'm not saying that at all. This is you saying that.
Because none of you will pin down to which one that you enjoyed more. But you made a good point by saying like, this one I would watch more, but the other one I appreciate it for a different reason, so it's totally different. So in that way, you can't compare them, you know.
Yeah.
Because like, you can enjoy something more.
They're different episodes.
Like Leaving Las Vegas with Nick Cage was a great movie, but it's like hard to watch more than.
Oh yeah, it's like Deer Hunter.
Deer Hunter, yeah.
Seven brilliant movies. I don't ever want to see them again. So like, that's an extreme example.
So it's kind of
I would be perfectly happy watching both of these episodes many times.
Yeah. Okay.
It's only a half hour.
Well. So the we never got to an answer of which is better.
No.
That's a stupid
don't
question.
Don't be so labeling. But,
That's what I was getting at. Like you just said, it was a stupid question, and I'm sorry.
I didn't say that.
No, it's true. I don't use that word.
We did briefly touch on what Sulu talked about, but I think it's worth, you know, just mentioning once again before we finish up the discussion here.
He said it was Idaho. Don't you want to feed the horses?
Well, he had that nice perspective on life, which is, you know, yes, you know, there's randomness and death and can be meaningless or whatever, but it's a quote unquote reflection of the random joys you encounter throughout life too.
The randomness of death is merely a reflection of the unexpected joys we find in life.
Yeah, it's the same sort of deal.
And if you live to be like in your 90s, then you have that kind of outlook.
Yeah, and if you die, you're not going to worry about it anyway.
And if you die before that, who cares?
You're dead.
Other people might worry about it.
You just did.
You don't need to be worrying about it.
What are you worried about?
But that's not an insignificant moral position to take and a moral dilemma to put Boimler in. I like when Lower Decks does that, where they remember or they remind the audience that this is a proper Star Trek show. And they're mm-hmm. often dealing with, in fact, almost always dealing with proper Star Trek level type concerns, some of which are existential ruminations on what a conscious entity's places in the universe.
And it had that like hazy look to it, just like it did on the movie. Like,
yeah,
where it has that sort of like
in the Nexus
dreamy
Nexus-y
sort of,
style.
How they made things look on more like that's like more of a TV.
Boimler makes some comment on marrying Lee. Was it Leanne from his raisin farm?
Right. Did we
all those women were into him on the raisin farm, right. But Leanne was the one he was into.
Right. Right. I was actually wondering, did they mention Leanne in that episode? Like, could we go back to that episode and find out which one?
I think
was?
It's the blonde one.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that. But he has a certain type because he likes the Barbara, what's her name?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Barbara Gibson.
And then in the movie, he programs the girl who's like, she's...
Helena Gibson.
Yeah, Helena Gibson.
Barbara.
Barbara is in the, you know, the girlfriend, the actual girlfriend.
Yeah. Is Barb. Oh, Barb.
The Cupid's heiress.
Played by
Gillian.
Gillian.
Gillian. It's,
Jillian
it's,
Jacobs.
It's fucked up of me to purposefully mispronounce her name. I'm sorry.
It is. Okay, so that's Sulu. All right, and then the last thing we have to discuss, of course, however briefly, is the cliffhanger, right? They have a cliffhanger joke.
Cliffhanger.
My name is Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, the cliffhanger Gainer. Joke. The cliffhanger joke where they first make a joke about cliffhangers.
It's not really a cliffhanger, though, is it?
It is a cliffhanger because we don't know what's going to happen.
Cliffhanger is like when you're falling off the cliff.
And what's going to happen?
The Enterprise explodes.
Or will it not explode?
I think this counts because you're wondering what's going to happen.
This is like a
next.
Sneaky. This is a sneaky. So, sneaky sneak.
So this is a sneaky sneak.
William Boimler.
This was, by the way, this was in System Redacted. Yeah. Now, the font they used made it look like it was the name of the episode title.
But it's not.
It wasn't. It was the place they were at. But it looked like the episode. We're watching an episode
normally
called System.
That would be down. You could argue that's a production error.
Yeah.
It should have been at the bottom of the screen.
Because
it should have said like Galore 3 or whatever.
It's
but, you know, the bottom of the screen.
Or like, because as far as I know, the episode, now we're watching an episode called System Redacted.
Bucephalus Prime.
I think they've said System Redacted before. I can't remember if it was on Lower Decks or one of the other shows. Mm. One of the other recent shows, maybe. Maybe it was the Lower Decks, but I've seen that before. Maybe it was in Wage Douge. Mm. I can't remember, but there's something makes me think that we've seen
douge,
this before.
Douge.
All right, douge, so douge. Basic idea here is that William Boimler, not dead, he's joining
he's
Section
just,
he's 31.
Evil, not dead.
He's just evil Boimler.
Well, maybe not evil. They do code
sneak,
him as a little
sneak,
evil.
Sneaky
right?
Boimler.
But he's joining Section 31.
He's a little sneaky.
He's a sneak. There's a defiant class looking chip going on there.
Yeah, totally.
So they set us up for something fun.
Could be cool. Yeah.
Somewhere down the line, right? So we'll see how that goes. And it could be that he actually dies and then they have to get, in order to complete a mission, they have to get Brad Boimler to like replace him.
Ooh, yeah.
Or Brad Boimler gets mistaken for him.
Or they have to go head to head.
Walking down something. Yeah. Or they have to go head to head and then team up and then go head to head again and then team up again. Something along those lines. We'll see.
The possibilities are endless.
They are endless. Okay.
Timba. That guy said Timba.
Exactly.
Yes. Which is just as random when he's like doing stuff. He's just like Timba.
Timba. I can't remember what he used. He used that.
Timba, his arms wide.
Right. Yeah. What does Timba mean by itself? Nothing. It would just be an exclamation. It would just be like, wah! Because, right, like a single word doesn't mean much in Temerian, right?
It can be a shortcut for the whole phrase.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Timba, his arms open.
That's interesting. They're probably trying to buy Wallerian Deuteronium to power the chronogasmic matrix.
Chronogasmic.
Yeah, that was what Gibson said.
Yeah, and then Mariner had some line about saying a bunch of words.
Yeah.
Any other things? Discussion points? Odds and ends? Anything else popping out at you about this episode? We largely covered it.
Shatnari. I remember eating some kind of like tofu ice cream. It wasn't,
and then you Shatnari'd it out?
It wasn't called it wasn't Tofuti because I think it was called like Vitari or something.
Was it called Tofruity?
No.
The cat could smell like the 20th century. That was good.
Yeah.
The 20th century always stinks.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And then the cat's all like, holodeck might be fake, but dehydration is real.
Yeah.
take a water break.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a good point. Oh, and then Stevens leaned against the warp core.
Twice in one day.
He's like, twice in one day.
Yeah, that was disturbing. Yeah, so that was like really disturbing at first. But then when they threw in the twice in one day, that totally diluted the whole, like, at first it's like, oh my God. And he said that and you're like, it's funny now. To do that.
Yeah. It was the same thing with William Boimler surviving. First of all, I think it was very predictable. That it was going to turn out that William Boimler.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying that. Arrived.
No, but I'm saying they also had to have that happen because it would have been a downer of an episode.
Yeah.
It might not seem like it, but if William Boimler had actually died for real, this episode would be much more of a downer than it ended up being.
So, right, and I want to make it clear that I didn't think that there wasn't anything mind-blowing about this episode. There was no twists and turns. I wasn't like, oh my gosh. It was all very derivative and predictable in a lot of ways, but I thought the presentation was just pleasant.
I agree. Yeah. I thought it was excellent, excellent presentation.
On the subreddit Australia, Australia, the subreddit for Australia, it says, whatever happened to Vitari ice cream? So Vitari was, I'm right, there was an ice cream. I think it was a fake ice cream. I'm not sure, but I think it was made out of
you're
putting us on.
Spiders or lizards or something?
Spiders.
Are you putting us on?
I'm not putting you on.
Australian spider ice cream?
Get out of the city.
It's made out of webs.
Spider cream. Let's eat some spider cream. I was just saying that because Shatnari sounded like Vitari. But yeah, so, you know, Boimler, William Boimler's still alive.
Yeah, no, I think we've concluded that portion of the discussion.
Lieutenant Commander
Bill
Mina
Boimler.
Vesper. Oh, they had a Bill, that watch they had from Chrono Watch, was that like a Bill and Ted watch? That looked like a Bill and Ted watch.
It was a little Bill and Ted-ish.
Yeah.
And that is a movie about time travel as well.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, the second one's way better.
I wouldn't say it's way better, but I would say... I know. And just,
Bill and
just
Ted's Bogus Journey,
it's
better than Excellent Adventure.
Advanced.
I think that they're about, they both have something equal to offer. I think they're both amazing movies, honestly.
I think the second one has better character development. It's got Station, which is really upsetting and weird. And they talk to God.
The whole end sequence was in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was good, but it felt like there was some parts taken out. I don't know.
But quite possibly. Quite possibly. All right. Well, we'll discuss that further in a future episode of It's Not Star Trek.
It's not.
We can talk about
Bill
and Ted's.
Well, I mean, there wasn't much character development in the first one, but you know, when you think about it, there wasn't much really any character development in The Matrix either. You know, that wasn't.
What does The Matrix have to do with?
We're talking about.
And that
we're
movie
talking.
Sucked.
Yeah. Thank you, Jesse. We're talking about movies that are good movies. You're saying it's better because it had more character development. I'm saying even there's.
I'm really saying it's better because it had Station.
Station. Yeah. Station was pretty.
Station
cool.
Like really upset
Station.
Me.
Yeah.
Like a,
oh yeah.
As a film goer, you know, it's like you watch like you know you watch like some Fellini films or something. You watch some of these. You watch some of these movies from the 70s and stuff. And you there's disturbing or upsetting imagery. There's similar to this episode, there's some sort of existential drama and stuff like that. None of that, none of those things, you're watching the 400 blows, you know, none of that impacted me as much as watching Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and dealing with that, like just trying to comprehend the character of Station.
Yeah.
Like for real.
It was a weird thing. There was some weird shit going on.
It's like some philosophically upsetting shit
that
happens in that movie. So maybe that's why it's like with the peanut hamper episode, it impacted me more internally.
Like a tooth, it was impacted.
Not over here, buddy. I don't have any impacted teeth over here.
Oh, good. Did you used to?
I don't have any impacted molars.
Did you used to?
No. Had them all yanked out.
Good for you.
Just yanked that shit right out.
Call him Weird Al Yankovic over here.
Yep.
Weird Al Yank my tooth.
Yeah. Okay. So that does it for this.
That does
for this week. Next week, you know, I don't know what they're gonna. I don't think they've released the episode name for next week yet. It's the ninth episode. It's the penultimate
you
episode.
You love that word.
Anti-penultimate is even better, but I missed out on that. This is the episode we were just talking to.
Well, you still have time.
Well, we just concluded talking about the anti-penultimate episode, and then they've got the penultimate episode.
I think you missed it literally right after we finished.
I think by the time you say anti-penultimate, I think there's nothing else we have to say.
Yeah, probably. So, in the meantime,
it's got Star Trek.
You can rate and review
Apple Podcasts,
like and subscribe.
You can shut the fuck up.
Facebook,
Twitter,
YouTube.
He already said YouTube. www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Tickle in my throat.
Oh no.
www.tickleinyourthroat.com. That's unaffiliated. We are not affiliated. Whatever that website is, we're not affiliated with it. Dan is merely a member, but not in a governing capacity. As far as I know, you're not.
Throat Ticklers Anonymous.
Oh man, don't go there.
Yeah. All right. So that concludes all the major business.
This psychologist guy that I saw once was telling me that like he had a friend psychologist who had a patient whose patient was sitting there and he had this fetish about he liked things like itching at the inside of his throat. And he said at the end of their first session, the guy like reached into his mouth and pulled on a piece of dental floss that was connected to like a plastic fork that was hanging in his throat the entire session. The dude tied one end of dental floss around a fork and the other end around a tooth.
And he swallowed it
so he could just pull it back out. And he said like his friend psychologist guy just like almost lost his shit.
Yeah,
like,
I bet.
So that's ticklemythroat.com right there.
That psychologist got a lot of money off of that guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for real.
All right. Well, we've conveyed most of the relevant and irrelevant information. And so we will be back next week to talk about the penultimate episode of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3. And whatever that ends up being called, we look forward to talking about that with you. So we're at you, really. It's really more talking at you. Talking at you.
Yeah. Fuck talking to or with people.
We can interact
talking
with you.
At them is all what
we
it's all about.
Interact with you on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. We can interact with you that way.
But in this forum.
But in the pure podcast, the core entertainment portion, the core piece of artwork that we're providing. Is non-interactive.
So if you got an opinion about what we're saying right now, you can just eat shit.
I mean, you could write at feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Oh, no. They can contact us.
You can go eat.
You can contact us. But
they just can't do it immediately.
It's an asymmetrical.
No. Yeah, communication,
you know,
right.
Non-live communication. So
yeah, you're right.
Those are the opportunities.
So I still got to be careful about what I call people.
No.
Well, I mean,
I love people.
Within reason.
I don't want anyone to eat shit. I'm just being fun.
All right. Well, we'll find out. We'll find out how much truth there is in that statement next week on the It's Got Star Trek podcast with Dan and Jesse and me, Patrick.
Wow.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Captain Sulu. I think I can live with that.
Happy to help a fellow Starfleet officer looking for answers.
Oh, great. Awesome. So, can I ask you what it was like working with Spock and Uhura? Was it weird using the crystal buttons on the Enterprise? Ooh, did you practice daily with the sword? I'm kind of a sword guy myself, so...
The horsey's going to bite you now.
What?